Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
You're listening to A Slice of Cheese with Jenny Linford on Food FM. Savour the crunch of Peter's Yard sourdough crackers. Available at Tesco, Waitrose, Sainsbury's, Asda, Morrisons, Ocado, Amazon and specialist food retailers.
To find out more about Food FM and our content, go to foodfmradio.com.
Hello, welcome to A Slice of Cheese, the Food FM radio series that celebrates the world of cheese. I'm Jenny Linford, a food writer and cheese enthusiast, the author of Great British Cheeses. Cheese is a delicious and fascinating food, and we're setting out to explore this remarkable food and share the stories of the people who make, sell and love it.
The Latin American cheese scene. This week, Slice of Cheese goes on a journey and explores the world of Latin American cheese. Cheese expert Carlos Yescas tells us about the history of cheese making in this region. Mexican cheese expert Jessica Fernandez of Lactography in Mexico City discusses Mexico's cheeses and how they are used in Mexican cuisine. And wholesale cheesemonger John Braga shares his insights into Brazil's cheese scene.
Online, on smart speakers and on Listen Again, this is Food FM.
This week on A Slice of Cheese, we're looking at the world of Latin American cheese. And I have the perfect person to talk to today, Carlos Yescas, cheese expert. Hello, Carlos.
Hi, Jenny.
Carlos, I must admit, I know I would say next to nothing about Latin American cheese. So I want your guidance here. Perhaps we should start by sort of defining the geography of Latin America. Which countries do we mean when we use that phrase?
You know, this is a topic that I love. And so I'm going to try to explain a lot very easily. So we think about Latin America, everything from the Rio Grande, so the border between Mexico and the United States, all the way down to Argentina. So this is over half of the Americas. So basically the only countries that we don't consider Latin America are the United States, Canada, and the Caribbean countries. Everyone else is considered Latin American. That's why so many people consider this sort of Spanish America. But the reality is also that there is French speakers, there's Portuguese speakers, and then there's, of course, people that speak native languages. But it is a big, vast region of the world.
So cheese in Latin America. I mean, perhaps. I mean, how do we go about this, Carlos? Should we? Do you want to tell me about its history, or should we zoom in on a particular part of Latin America?
So the first thing that I like to say when I'm explaining this is that the original Americans, right before the European colonizers arrived, had no dairy animals. There was, although llamas and all other camelids like llamas and alpacas give some milk, the milk was never really used for human consumption. So it was really the arrival of the colonizers, Spanish, Italian, Portuguese, and British and Dutch, who brought with them cattle that was able to produce milk. For that reason, it is very specific the types of cattle that ends up arriving in different parts of the continents. So if you think about it, you know, the Spanish, who arrive mostly in Mexico and Central America, are bringing with them mostly goats. Why? Because goat milk consumption and goat meat consumption in Spain is big. And so they bring goats with them. They bring a couple of cows, but they don't bring as many. Then the Italians that end up settling in the southern hemisphere, in what is today, Argentina, Uruguay, Paraguay, end up bringing sheep. And so they have a double purpose of being good for wool, but also for milk. So that's part also of the culture, right? These animals that were brought back were animals for the double purpose of meat and milk, but also for, you know, their skins. This is already giving you a picture about how Latin American cheese ends up developing, right? Like, they are coming, the colonizers are arriving in different places with different cultures that they bring, but also with different animals. And that ends up impacting the type of cheese that ends up being produced. Then the other thing that, you know, it's important to think about is that, you know, at the moment of conquest, there was no refrigeration. And so a lot of the cheeses that were made in, you know, the valleys of Italy or the plains of Spain would have not been very easy to make in most of Latin America because it was hot. And so they wouldn't rot as they aged. So they had to be changes in the cheese making process to ensure that the cheeses were fit for purpose. And so that's why there's actually very little culture of aged cheeses, and aged cheeses don't become prevalent in Latin America until much later, when, you know, refrigeration comes in, and, you know, then there's a couple of styles that are able to use.
So cheeses were fresh cheeses then. That was a characteristic then of Latin American cheeses. They are perishable. They're eaten quickly so that they don't perish. They're not matured because the climate doesn't lend itself to maturation in pre-refrigeration times.
A lot of the cheeses from Mexico and Central America were cheeses that were fresh, were cheeses that were easily consumed and fast consumed. But also, because the indigenous peoples didn't have a culture of eating milk, both physiological, they didn't have the ability to process milk because they didn't eat it, but also they didn't have the culture. A lot of the cheese was only made for the colonizers. And so a lot of the cheese that ends up being made is for very quick use for the people that arrive. And then some aged cheeses are being brought, you know, in the travels. It takes a long time before Latin America starts producing not only larger format cheeses, not small fresh cheeses, but also it takes a long time for Latin America to start producing styles that are recognized as aged. This is also the reason why there was really no traditional blue cheese in Latin America, because there were no caves, there were no spaces where you could devote to the storage of cheese for a long time. Of course, now there is blue cheese in modern making, but all of those recipes have been around probably for the last maybe 100 years, as opposed to, you know, cheeses that have been made in Mexico and other parts of Latin America for, you know, 230, you know, 260 years.
Amazing. That's so fascinating. That dairy culture, which in a way obviously was not indigenous. So then, but does it spread? Do people develop a taste for cheeses? Do cheeses then play a role in cuisines? What sort of happens with time? I'm really enjoying this sort of insight into history here. Yeah.
So I think what is really interesting is that in countries that have a very strong sort of mixing of the indigenous peoples and the people who arrive, the cuisines develop in a way that there's a lot of cheese consumption. So this is a good example where Mexico is the best example of Mexican ingredients, which will be corn, tomatoes, chiles, get incorporated into Spanish techniques, also Spanish products, you know, like pork, but also cheese and other dairy, and then the cuisine sort of evolves. And there's a lot of consumption of cheese in Mexico. That will be the same for places like El Salvador or places like Colombia, for example. However, there are other places which historically there was not so much of what we call the mestizaje, the mixing of people between the colonizers and the people who were there, we've seen sort of remain very specific, attached to the ingredients and the techniques of the indigenous peoples. And so this will be places like Peru or Bolivia, where they have cheese, because, you know, everyone eats a little bit of cheese, but it's not a huge part of their consumption culturally. And then there's a third group of countries that most indigenous peoples are completely erased, either by disease or by a genocide. And then the cultures that remain, which is of the people that arrive, sort of bring in their whole cultures and they eat a lot of cheese. And this will be places like Uruguay or Argentina, that there is actually very little indigenous cuisine. There is still some, of course, that has survived, but there's a lot of sort of Italian and Spanish cuisines that they were brought, and they eat a lot of cheese. This is interesting in sort of in the modern day, because at the moment, when we think about sort of cheese consumption in the world, yeah, right, we think about Greece eating 33 kilos of cheese per capita per year. We have a country like Peru that the consumption per capita per year is of 500 grams.
Oh, wow. Right? So that's nothing.
Different. Yeah. It's incredible.
Yeah.
That's why so many producers of in the United States, in Europe, in the UK are looking into Latin America as a place to send their cheeses, because the space for consumption is huge, right? Like in the UK, maybe we're not saturated with the amount of cheese that we can eat. Maybe we can eat more cheese here. But, you know, if in Peru you move from 500 grams to maybe 2 kilos per capita per year, like that will be more of the consumption that, you know, you could have in England alone. So there is why there is also this interest, not only in cheeses that are coming from Latin America, but also of consumers in Latin America who are potential consumers of cheeses of Europe and the United States.
We've had that, the big picture is fascinating, but obviously we have had refrigeration. It's been around a long time, and we're, you know, very much a global marketplace. Things change. Is one of the trends overall in Latin America, is it of increased cheese consumption, or is it just incredibly variable for those historical regions that are particular to each country?
I would say that in the past 10 years, there has been a increased consumption of cheese in all of the region. And partly the reason is that some countries like Colombia or Uruguay have increased their middle class. And middle class in these countries is aspirational in many of the ways that they do to culture, to emulate the culture of Europe or emulate the culture in the United States. And so the consumption also has become that. And so there's a lot of consumption of European and American products and services, and cheese is a huge part. So a good example is pizza, right? Like when I was growing up, you know, I'm in my late 40s, there wasn't pizza everywhere. Now there's pizza everywhere in Latin America, and they are all of the toppings that you can imagine, indigenous toppings and regular toppings, but everything has cheese. And so the consumption has increased. And so that is also because the consumption is changing. There is also a price point variable that in many of these countries, meat consumption is really expensive. And I'm here talking specifically about beef. And so people obviously still eat some chicken and definitely eat some pork, but beef is really expensive. In sort of in the variety of things that people want to eat, maybe they have decreased their consumption of animal protein, you know, like meat and beef and that kind of stuff, and they eat more cheese. So there is also this growth in the industry and in the consumption of cheese. So I think there's a couple of reasons why there's more cheese consumption in Latin America. And I think that it's definitely growing. And we see that not only in the amount of cheese that is being sent from Europe, but also in the amount of cheese that is being produced in these countries.
I was wondering, you know, because we've talked about the colonizers and their cheese heritage. So I was partly thinking about the United States of America and how a lot of the cheeses there are inspired by European cheeses or are versions of European, traditional European cheeses. Is that something that's been a strand then in Latin America? Like, you know, if you went to a country that had an Italian colonial past, do you then see Italian cheeses being made or versions of Italian cheeses?
Definitely. I think that places like Argentina and Uruguay who had an influx of Italians have cheeses that emulate Parmigiano Reggiano or Pecorino Sardo. And they even use those names in some of those countries still to define their cheeses. And there is also, you know, you're right, in the United States, there is a lot of products that we sort of recognize, especially from England, you know, cheddar and, you know, cheeses that are in the sort of territorial style. In Latin America, because the immigration was different, there are things that emulate more things from Spain and Italy, but increasingly you can find people trying to make cheddars, people trying to make blue cheeses, people trying to make some wash rinds even, and definitely fresh goat cheeses, you know, like those from the Loire Valley. And that's also because Latin Americans themselves have both emigrated to Europe as an economic migrants or refugees, or people have come to study for, you know, generations and then they go back and they have an appreciation for these products and they want them. And so there is now producers who either live here or have learned techniques in Europe and they're going back to Latin America and making these cheeses. And there is also a market for those cheeses. So we in Mexico have, with my company, we have a selection of about probably 40 cheeses. And although we concentrate on Mexican styles or what we consider Mexican styles, we now have, you know, cheeses that are sort of more closely resemble either Italian or Dutch styles, and we have a demand for them as well. Of course, they're quite different, some of them, especially in the Alpine, just because, you know, making Alpine cheese in not an Alpine region is,
yes,
kind of hard.
It's pretty hard. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because people in Britain keep trying, like, it's quite hard if you don't have the Alps. It's like, yeah.
But there is definitely a path towards this, and you know, this is why the culture houses, the people selling techniques and technologies, are trying to develop those cheeses in Latin America, because there is a consumption and there'll be a price differential that is huge. If you can make something, you know, like a Gruyere style in, say, Venezuela, it'll be much cheaper than try to bring something from, from the actual Alps.
And so all those, the dairy animals that we introduced, has one become dominant? You mean, are cows the dominant dairy animal, or are sheep and goats, are all those the three, are those sort of three milks popular in Latin America?
Definitely cow's milk is the most popular. I think for the many reasons that also they're very popular in places like the UK, is that they produce so much more, right? Like the volume of milk that a cow produces is so much more and is so much easier to handle than a goat milk or a sheep's milk. Now, the thing also that has happened is that in the 1950s, there was a big push from a couple of Latin American countries, Mexico, Colombia, Venezuela at that point, and probably Argentina, that invested heavily on genetics for cows. And so these were partnerships from private companies, you know, families, farms that wanted better animals, and the governments either subsidized or got the permits and moved cows or brought semen into Latin America. And so we have something very similar in what the United States and some places in Europe have, which is, you know, two or three types of cows that sort of are prevalent everywhere. So this will be the Holstein sort of Dutch style cows, Sanin goats, which are big producers, easy to feed, you know, the genetics are very obvious. And what is happening, like in a lot of other parts in the world, is that we're starting to see a decline of those productions, and people are starting to bring genetics of other breeds of animals. And they're trying to do that as well. And what is interesting is that sort of the original cows, maybe not the original cows, but some of the cows that arrive in these places have been adapted to the climates of Latin America, and the genetics of those animals are being now integrated with these sort of genetics that are being brought from abroad, and they're creating these hybrid cows. I would say that as this is sort of the generality, Brazil in this specific issue is very interesting, because Brazil, for some reason that I don't know, because I don't know the entire history of what happened in Brazil, they have mostly Cebu cows. So these are the cows that have the big hump in the back.
Yeah.
Which are more closely associated with water buffaloes and, you know, cows that are of the Indian subcontinent. And there is a lot of production of milk from those cows and a lot of production of cheese from milk from those cows. And that is not... there's a couple of those cows in Mexico and in Venezuela. There's not a lot of that. But in Brazil, you know, these cows sort of took over, or this genus of cows sort of took over, and then they do produce it with that. And also the genetics are now being interesting, because they're, a lot of people are starting to use those genetics of those animals that had adapted to sort of the Amazonian jungle, or, you know, the climates of very hot climates of northern Brazil, and their genetics are being used to sort of make other breeds of cows more robust as climate change starts affecting a lot of places in Latin America very fast.
Yeah, interesting. And what, when you look at Latin America, Carlos, do you see, are there sort of craft cheese producers, you know, because you talked about, you know, the rise of the middle class and cheese being something that's sort of an aspirational food in a way. And so is there a move, you know, are there sort of craft cheesemakers setting up to, you know, to, I don't know, perhaps people who come over here and get inspired by what they taste in cheese shops here, or interested in, the, you know, cheese has that sort of effect, awfully, of fascinating people, as we both know, I think. And do you see that starting to happen in Latin America?
Yeah, that has happened for a long time. And I would say that Brazil and Mexico are sort of in the avant-garde of this. They have been sort of craft producers in the same way that there has been in the US or even in England, craft smaller producers who are making new different styles or using new techniques for about 10 years, maybe 12 years. And now places in Colombia, places like Colombia and Argentina and Uruguay are starting to follow as well with more craft production. Chile is such an interesting place at the moment for cheese, because they had a very robust culture. And because of the geography of Chile, which is so extreme, because, you know, they sort of have all of the weathers possible, because they run the entire length of the continent. They have a lot of different cheeses throughout. And now there's also a craft production there as well, sort of utilizing those different climates that they have. So there is a lot of things happening in Latin America. And I think that I was very recently in Italy at the slow food event in Bra. And I was pleasantly surprised to see how many Latin Americans were there looking at what sort of has been dubbed as the natural cheesemaking movement. So this is a group of people that are trying to not only make their own rennet, but also trying to develop their own cultures, trying to use less of the sort of commercial ingredients that are out there. And you know, very similar to what happened in wine with the natural wine movement, there's now a natural cheese movement. And a lot of Latin Americans are part of it, and they're leading the way in many ways, because they, you know, they don't come with all this baggage that they need to get rid of, you know, denominations of origin or other systems that exist in Europe. It's very easy to set up a natural cheesemaking in Uruguay or Argentina or, you know, Chile. And so there are definitely that movement is happening fast. And I think we'll start seeing a lot of more cheeses that are very good quality coming from those people. And it's just a matter of, you know, can we actually get them to bring here? Because, you know, the internal consumption is strong for the cheeses. And then, you know, bring them to the other side of the world will be very expensive. But I think eventually there will be, those cheeses will start coming to European markets.
Carlos, that must be really fascinating for you to see this burgeoning and flourishing, and this, you know, and the excitement of new things happening. So brilliant. Well, thank you so much for that, you know, taking us on a wonderful, rich journey. We're much appreciated. Thank you, Carlos.
Online, on smart speakers, and on Listen Again. This is Food FM.
You're listening to A Slice of Cheese with Jenny Linford on Food FM. Savour the crunch of Peter's Yard sourdough crackers. Available at Tesco, Waitrose, Sainsbury's, Asda, Morrison's, Ocado, Amazon, and specialist food retailers.
This week on A Slice of Cheese, we're looking at the world of Latin American cheese. I'm very happy to have with me, joining me all the way from Mexico, Jessica Fernandez, cheese specialist and educator. Hi, Jessica. How are you?
Hi, great. And you?
I'm good. I was really interested to know more. I know, I'm afraid my ignorance is deep about Latin American cheese, partly I think because we don't get a lot of Latin American cheese in Britain. So I was really interested to find out more about the place that cheese has in Mexican culture, I suppose, Mexican society.
So for us, it's a cheese that we eat probably every day. We will have a portion or two of cheese, but really it never comes by itself. It's always part of a more elaborated dish. We consume fresh cheeses. And those cheeses, if you have like a market near you, that was like my grandmother used to do it. Like, we used to have a market near our house, well, her house, and then we would go there in the morning to get some groceries and some ingredients. And then we will get our cheeses from our dairy. That is like sour right. cream and fresh yeah. cheese for the day.
Ah,
and
nice.
Then you can have it at breakfast, because you can have some eggs and you can sprinkle some cheese on it, on your beans, because beans is a very important part of our culture. So beans is something that you will normally eat at breakfast and lunch. And then you will put some grated cheese on top of beans. Also, there's some dishes that it's part of the preparation, so you cannot make it without the cheese. And that is divided by region. It depends on which part of Mexico you are, what are the kind of staple or traditional dishes made with cheese.
Can you give us some examples of those dishes, Jessica?
Yes, of course. So my grandma used to make something called chiles rellenos, and it's a poblano chile. Poblano peppers are a little bit bigger. They are not spicy, actually, well, for us. Some might, it depends on the year if it is spicy or not, but it's a less spicy pepper. So what we do is we'll roast the skin of the pepper and take it out. Then this pepper will be stuffed with a melting cheese, and then it will be covered in a single egg batter. It doesn't have any flour. It will be like a just egg, like a very well buttered egg, like a meringue, but not baked.
Like a meringue.
Like it's literally
yeah.
exactly, but fried, and that's the covering of the pepper. Like, and then that will be on a single plate, and then you will put on top like a tomato sauce, but it doesn't have any pepper because you already have the spicy part on the pepper. So this is just plain tomato sauce on top with some onions. That's
sounds lovely. I mean, that's so interesting. So the cheese, I was interested in what you said about the fresh cheese being bought every day, but you said that's how your grandmother would have done that. But that's, has that changed now? When you know, life, things change in societies, don't they? And shopping, food habits change, the way people purchase food changes. Is fresh cheese not bought in markets so much, or is it still bought in markets?
It's still bought in markets, but if you're in Mexico City, that's a little bit more complicated, because bringing the cheese from different states, it's more complex. So now people find it easier to go to the supermarket and just get the same varieties, but more industrialized. I don't like to do that because I don't like that cheese, to be honest. I think it's an idea of what we used to eat. but the flavor is so flat and I find it flavorless. If you live in a town outside Mexico City, well, different states, it's still possible to go out there and find these cheeses in different markets. And I think it's delicious. There's even some cheeses that I cannot get in Mexico City and I can just get when I travel to this location because they are so fresh and it's been made in so small batches that it's very hard for them to be taken out of that part. So people go to the supermarkets if they want to just have an easy fix for what they need to cook. But there's some people that still make the effort to go to markets. There are some markets in Mexico City that you can go to and actually get some good cheeses from. And there's another option too, like us, Lactography, that we provide that cheese. So you can have some fresh cheeses from us and then we will just deliver. Yeah, we will deliver to your house. So that's another cool part that if you are like, I don't know, on craving of cooking something very specific, we will just take the cheese to your house.
That's fantastic. That's very interesting. I mean, because I'm so interested in food and I love cooking, I tend to go to a lot of what other people see sort of trouble when I buy my ingredients. But for me, that's sort of actually part of the pleasure is there's a fish stall in the market. He's got really great fish. That's so much fresher than supermarket fish that I just buy from him. It's quite similar in a way. If you think about freshness, which is like very, you know, which is a very special quality, isn't it? If you prize it and it's worth seeking out, isn't it? If you like it, I think.
Yes, I love fish too. And I get what you say. It's just, what I feel that it has changed in the past year is we have started losing that bridge of passing on certain knowledge about food to younger generation. So for them, it's the only thing they know to go to the supermarket and get these ingredients from. When you start losing this bridge of communication about food, and in certain cultures like United Kingdom, Europe, like us, Mexico. And if you lose those bridges of communication, I think also the value of the ingredient, not just the economic value, but what it represents, start getting lost in time. Because people just assume that that's the way like fish is supposed to taste or like cheese is supposed to taste. And then you end up assuming that having bad ingredients, it's normal.
No, I mean, it's just really, there's so much pressures, but it's interesting that people are still valuing it. And I'm sure, and you must be doing your bit. So you stock fresh cheese in your shop, I'm guessing, to support the cheesemakers who make this cheese, which is very central to Mexican cuisine. Is that right?
Yeah, we carry them because, first of all, it's super important for us to still preserving the ability for you to get these cheeses. And second one is also about, like you said, like telling the cheesemaker, please don't stop doing them. It's still important for us to preserve them. And that's why we rotate fresh cheese very quickly. It's one of our most rotating cheeses. We don't store them for a long time. That's the other thing, that our cheeses won't have a long expiring date because they're still artisanal cheese. That's the other thing, that's something that we want to change. We want to tell people, please, just buy once a week. And you don't have to buy a lot. Just buy a piece once a week, and then you keep buying it. Because that's the other thing. People go and buy cheese and stretches for 1 month. Because that's the other thing. Like, industrial cheese has that capacity. We don't. So that's the other thing that we're trying to change. Like, come back again. Go back again to your fishmonger. Because, of course, fish is not meant to last forever. So keep going, keep returning, it's like be there. That's the idea that we want to start sharing to people, like how really life and food is a cycle and what you're eating is organic to the point that it's an organic matter. So of course it will have changes, but don't be afraid of that. Just embrace it and get used to it.
Are there chefs in Mexico who are championing Mexican cheese? I mean, because they see it as a valuable part of the culture and, you know, that's a rich tradition that they want to keep. Because in Britain, we have quite a lot of chefs will make a point of putting small foods from small producers on menus to try and sort of, because they enjoy the quality of the ingredient and to keep, you know, and it makes a market and it spreads the word. Does that happen in Mexico too?
Yes, like we have a lot of clients that are also chefs, and they really like to champion Mexican cheeses because of the value that they have, but also because they see cheese as a vehicle to express what they want with food. Mexican cheeses has this, they're more flavorful, they are more, you know, whole in every way, like texture, flavor, and they really like to work with it because they say, oh, I couldn't, sometimes they say, I couldn't imagine Mexican cheeses could taste like this, but yeah, they can. So they fell in love with the ingredient, the fact that they can source it, they can go back to the source, they can tell a story through cheeses. It's very important for them too.
Yeah. And how, so one of the things I've seen in my years, decades actually, writing about food in Britain has been the rise of an artisan, for want of a better word, cheese scene, you know, the growth of people starting to make cheeses with great care and attention and finding a market for it. I mean, that's really, you know, I've seen that sort of market and that interest in British foods grow enormously in my own during my own career. Is there a sort of vibrant cheese making scene in Mexico, Jessica?
We kind of categorize cheeses in two. The traditional ones that comes from even 400 years of history, and the new wave of cheesemakers. I think young people is very interested in learning how to make cheese and also kind of start switching a little bit around the family business because either they have a cheese making business or they just have the animals and they want to start adding value to the milk. I think it's starting. The seed probably was planted like 15 years ago. And we are now seeing some of the blooming of that initial idea. And also there's, I have seen it in the past 5 years, like a lot of young people is starting to be very interested in cheese, but making it, becoming cheesemakers. And I really am looking forward to see what's going to be in 5 years. Right now, I think they're learning about what they would like to do, like find their own sort of saying voice, because for me, a cheesemaker is also about personal preference and how would you like to express what you would like to offer, you know, to the market. Like maybe I would like to do the cheese or the other. So I will say it's starting, this vibrant scene is starting to bloom, to develop. And I think in 5 years, it's going to be very interesting.
It is interesting. I mean, because you will obviously know, Jessica, about America's cheese scene and the way that that's changed, you know, enormously in the last 20 years. That's the impression I get, that in the last 20 years, there's been this real rise of farmhouse or craft cheese making in America, and which seems very buoyant. I mean, I don't want to, I know it's always tough. I understand that it's tough for small producers, but on the other hand, if there is an interest and if people want to value good food and are interested in it and happy to buy it and use it, that can be a very sort of fruitful cycle to get into.
Yes, and also I think they want to reconnect and go back to what they found meaningful, because some of these young cheesemakers, what I found incredible is that they are more educated than their parents, and this is something that they're choosing to do with the knowledge that they have now. It's like, okay, I'm going back to this business and I'm going back because I fell in love with it, but I bring something else to the table. I want to do it differently. And they're more professional trained, they're more international, there's cheesemakers that have traveled or even learned to make cheese in other countries. So right. It's very interesting.
Yes, I was going to ask about that. And they said, presumably, they must be more, you know, more acquainted with social media, which is a fantastic way, actually, to reach out to people and tell people if you've got a good story or you show, you know, if you're something you're very... And I think social media works very well when people are genuinely into what they do. It's a very... it's a great vehicle, actually, for sharing your enthusiasm for what you do with other people.
Yes, I'm very bad at it, which is ironic because I actually studied media and communication. That's my major.
Did you?
But I'm very bad at it. Yes, I would love to kind of learn how to be a better storyteller. But I guess I have to do it because there are some very fantastic stories about Mexican cheeses that need to be shared about the people that is part of it. Because I think for me, that's the most valuable thing about cheese. It's just the people. The people that is part of it, the community. I find their stories, the struggles, everything is so worth it. We try to, with Lactography, that is our story in Mexico, that was also part of the main idea, that we wanted to tell these stories and we wanted to walk together like this path. For us, it was not just about selling the cheese, it was about working together. So what we can do for them or for the cheesemakers, and what we can do for the cheese itself in a way that serves its own purpose to improve what we were doing, you know, to improve selling more traditional cheeses, but also to find a space for new cheeses that are being trying to find a place in the market.
I mean, I think that's what's interesting is that in Britain, you know, we have a cheese scene that has got very historic traditional cheeses, you know, that have been around for centuries. You know, certainly the names have been around. And then, but equally have this very buoyant sort of crypt where people are, you know, making new cheeses they've come up with. I just talked to a young woman this morning who's making a soft sheep's milk cheese, which is very unusual in Britain to have that, you know. But so she's spotted, she's on a farm, fell in love with cheese making, changed her job and wants to do this. And it's just really interesting. And that will, there's space for both, you know, there's space for our classic cheddars and Stilton and Cheshire cheeses. And there's space for these new cheese makers too, which is very exciting. In fact, so Jessica, I mean, the feeling I get when I hear you talking about food in Mexico is like, oh, it sounds so fantastic and so rich. So if I was coming to Mexico, are there dishes that capture an aspect of Mexican cheese that you would recommend people to try?
So what I will recommend if you want to visit the country, not just the city, is go to the West Coast. The West Coast has a very interesting food traditions, and many of them are based on cheese. The Northwest Coast has very good cheeses, and their traditional foods also incorporate cheese to the preparation. One of my other favorite food is taco gobernador. We call it the governor's taco. And it's literally seafood with cheese from the north that is called asadero. So it's a melting, people will call it quesadilla, but we call it taco. It's like a melting quesadilla, but it's stuffed with seafood and marinated in a sauce. And my mouth is watering. It's one of my favorite tacos, but it's people really sometimes just think that cheese cannot play a main role in a dish. My other favorite region for food that some people don't think about it very, very much, because I know Oaxaca is very important for Mexican cuisine, but in that part of Mexico in the south, the states of Veracruz and Chiapas have amazing food. And they have amazing cheeses that have been made for hundreds of years. And the cheese is part also of the food that they make there. They serve it for breakfast. Actually, we just made a road trip, Georgina and I, through the Gulf Coast of Mexico. We just visited Veracruz, but we found this cheese, like 15 kilo wheel of cheese, that is made with cows that grass-fed, probably 200 meters away from the sea. So the terroir of those cheeses are amazing because there are some mineral, but also because it's hot weather, the fruit notes of the acidification of the milk, the natural acidification, are fantastic. So I will say to people, go to different regions if you have the time, or try to find different cuisines, because even though we tend to generalize for more easy, well, because we do, because it's easier for us also to say Mexican food, but it's also interesting to say, oh, maybe I should try the cuisine of the north, because in the north we have the Mennonites and their cheeses are very interesting and what we cook with them. Also, you should try the food of the West Coast, you know, all the seafood mixed with cheeses. And that's something that you will normally don't see. Like, not a lot of people and not a lot of, actually, cultures mix seafood with cheese. We do. And also go to the south, but not just Oaxaca. Try the food from the Gulf Coast and also from Chiapas, because they carry a lot of tradition around cheese. They make some tamales that are stuffed with cheese, and those are delicious. One of my favorites also dishes in Mexico.
It sounds wonderful. Jessica, thank you so much. That was a wonderful glimpse into this sort of rich world of Mexican cheese. And carry on your good work, and you are a great storyteller, Jessica. And whenever I talk to you, I always think that. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm a huge fan of Peter's Yard's sourdough crackers, and they go beautifully with cheese. All Peter's Yard crackers are made in small batches using quality natural ingredients and their sourdough starter, slowly fermented for 16 hours for award-winning flavour and crunch.
Online, on smart speakers, and on Listen Again, this is Food FM.
You're listening to A Slice of Cheese with Jenny Linford on Food FM. Savour the crunch of Peter's Yard sourdough crackers. Available at Tesco, Waitrose, Sainsbury's, Asda, Morrisons, Ocado, Amazon and specialist food retailers.
This week on A Slice of Cheese, we're exploring the world of Latin American cheese. I'm very happy to have with me, joining us from New York City, John Braga, a wholesale cheesemonger. Hi, John.
Hi.
Hi, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. I mean, John, I wanted to ask you about sort of Brazil's cheese scene. And actually, I must confess, I know nothing. I would say literally nothing about Brazilian cheese. I mean, so tell me, is there a cheese scene in Brazil?
Oh, yes. We believe that cheese has been made in Brazil since the 16th century. Actually, it was obviously not as big at the time as the government's or the crown's priority, I should say, was gold mining and diamond mining. But eventually, cheese became, you know, very important to the economy. And in the past 20 years, I would say, it's become huge. There has been this huge cheese revolution where, you know, other states have also started to make cheese and to learn new recipes.
What are the dairy animals in? Is it cows like it is in Britain? You know, a lot of our cheese is predominantly cow milk cheese. Is that the same?
Yeah, well, yeah. The majority of the cheeses in Brazil are made with cow's milk. I would say either Holstein cows, Jersey, or Girolando, which is a crossing between Gir cows and Holsteins. There are also producers making cheeses with sheep's milk and goat's milk.
Right, same as in Britain. I mean, we have all three. I know we actually get buffalo cheese here too in Britain, but cow's very dominant. Tell me about the cheese styles then in Brazil, John. I'm fascinated. I want to learn more.
So we have according to the Department of Agriculture in Brazil, there are at least 36 different types of cheese being made there. These cheeses were mostly influenced by Portuguese recipes, but also Danish and Italian and now British and French as well. So there are all types of cheeses being made in Brazil. In my state, Minas Gerais, which is the state I was born and raised, we make mostly Portuguese-style cheeses. So think of Amarelo, which is this beautiful cow or sheep's milk cheese. Sometimes they use goat's milk to make that same style of cheese. But think of that yellow rind kind of cheese. And that's what I grew up on. My grandparents were actually cheese makers, and they were making mostly fresh raw cow's milk cheese. And sometimes they would age it. But at the time, it didn't, like, looking back now, those cheeses weren't really aged per se. That wasn't much of an affinage job per se. They were mostly just drying them out to use them for, you know, recipes later.
And you said about 20 years ago, there's been this sort of boom in a way in the cheese. What triggered that? Is that to do with increased prosperity or a new interest in cheese? Were there factors that you can see that helped bring that about?
Yeah, similarly to what happened to the U.S., people started to move back to the rural areas at around that time. And so they were looking for, you know, things to do, for, you know, ways to make money. And they also have more access to what was, you know, happening in other countries, like in Europe. So they were able to travel and learn new recipes. And, you know, obviously the internet in the 90s and early, you know, 2000s also helped a lot. And so people just started to learn more about what was happening in Europe and decided to bring some of that back to Brazil. And that's when cheese really cheese making really took off in São Paulo, for instance, where it's a state not very known for, it wasn't very known for cheese production, but then it just became this sort of like powerhouse. You know, they're just making all these different, you know, styles of cheese and basically making a lot of cheese and selling those cheeses to the entire country. So
it's sort of fascinating because in my own life as a sort of food writer here in Britain, I've seen a sort of cheese making renaissance in Britain with the rise of craft cheesemakers, farmers cheesemakers. It's wonderful actually, you know, to go into shops and see new cheeses by people who've just started making recently. And I've sort of seen that happen, you know, over the last decades. How did the cheeses get to market? Were they taken? Because if you don't have a sort of cheese scene, then obviously you need, then how does it get sold? Is it through markets or do people set up cheesemongers or how did it come about? Because you need to find that way of getting, being able to sell it, don't you?
Yeah, it started out, I think, at least when it comes to São Paulo, it started out with farmers markets and fairs and places where people could, you know, where farmers could bring their cheeses and really introduce them to the public. In Minas Gerais, in the state I was born, there was more of a, there were cheesemongers selling cheese door to door. I remember my grandparents would, they knew the neighbors who would buy the cheese from them. So they would just bring the cheese to their houses and whatnot. It was almost like selling milk before, you know, the 80s. Like a cheesemonger would knock door to door and just offer their
product. Some cheese. Perfect.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. But in São Paulo, you know, things were a little different because the city's much bigger too. And so it's not as easy to trust somebody who, you know, selling cheese, who's knocking on your door and trying to sell you cheese. So they had these farmers markets where they would advertise your cheeses and sell those cheeses pretty much. But yeah. And now, and then with social media, things became just so much easier. You get to produce content and talk about your cheeses and talk about the recipes and really educate the customer on what you're making and selling.
That's interesting, isn't it? In Britain, farmers markets, when I talk to food producers, not just cheesemakers, but they're very important, especially when people are making a new cheese and they're trying to take it to market because it's affordable to have a stall, infinitely more affordable than having a shop. And unless you get and you get to know people and you can try things out, the cheesemakers often say to me, oh, I get to try out my cheeses, Jenny. And it's like market research, farmers market research, where you get to talk to your customers and say, oh, do you like this? I need a new flavor or a new texture. I'm trying this and see if people are going to be receptive to buying it, which is very important, isn't it? In Britain, we're quite open-minded about the foods they try. I think that's one of the things about British food culture. It's very diverse. Is there an open-mindedness in Brazil?
Yeah, I would say that pretty much every state has its own cuisine. There are a lot of different, you know, dishes being made across the country. Cheese, for instance, is used as an ingredient in many, you know, different recipes, including cakes, bread, what else? Desserts, pasta. There's just so much. We use cheese. Yeah. We normally eat cheese in the morning, at least in my state, with guava paste. It's a combination we call Romeo and Juliet because there are two opposites that sort of, you know,
fall in love. Sweet.
So we eat cheese in the morning and then we have cheese lunch, usually in pasta or something. And then I remember that, like, cheese, at least in my, you know, family, cheese was always an excuse to talk about the neighbors. So my grandma would put a wheel of cheese like in the center of the, you know, at the center of the table. And that meant that it was time to, you know, gather around and, you know, gossip.
What,
and
gossip?
Yeah. And so it's always been a staple in, you know, families, you know, households in Minas Gerais, at least. But it's yeah, I'm pretty sure that it's the same. It's been the same in pretty much, you know, every state in the country. It's just always been very, cheese has always been very important to every state's cuisine, I would say. It's always been part of it in a way.
And is the cheese making, you know, is it a mix? Is there sort of industrialized, you know, mass production of cheese and then smaller scale cheesemakers? Is that how it, and I wonder, are they, is that right, John? You have both ends of the scale of cheese production?
Yes. So in 2017, the Department of Agriculture found out that there were at least 175,000 rural producers making cheese, so which is a lot, you know, in the country. And so there are a lot of small producers, But obviously, there are also some you know, mass-produced cheeses being made. We have a huge production of Havarti, you know, style cheese being made in Minas Gerais. We also have Gouda-style cheeses being made across the country.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, is that a direct link from sort of Dutch settlers or not? Or is there an influence there?
Yeah. So the Gouda style cheeses came with the Portuguese. They were very they were huge fans of you know Edam and Gouda and whatnot. So they brought that with them, and then naturally the Portuguese realized that it was easier to just produce those cheeses in Brazil rather than buying them from the Netherlands. Whereas with Havarti, there was this one Danish cheesemaker who traveled to Minas Gerais and taught the recipe to a bunch of cheesemakers there, and that just stuck around. It became popular, and then everybody started to, you know, buy those cheeses.
It's really interesting because in Ireland, the west coast of Ireland, there's a sort of a cheesemaking. There was a very early sort of cheesemaking renaissance, and there were. And there's quite a Dutch style because a Dutch man went over and started making, you know, Gouda style cheese there. And so it's just really interesting because then obviously it's been very, you know, it's a very nice cheese, isn't it? It's very popular. It's very easy to like, I think.
Yes, it was probably the easiest one to travel with at the time. When talking about the Portuguese bringing Dutch cheeses to Brazil, we're talking, you know, the 1500s.
If I was going to Brazil, John, which sadly I'm not, are there cheeses you would tell me that I should eat while I was there that would, you know, are there, you know, whether if someone was coming to Britain, I would say, oh, do you try, you know, farmhouse cheddar? It's a really wonderful, very British cheese that is a sort of taste because cheese is so expressive of place, isn't it? Is that the same? What would you recommend for somebody visiting Brazil?
Definitely. I would definitely recommend Canastra and Serro, S-E-R-R-O. We call it Serro cheese because these are some of the most some of the oldest cheeses being made in the country. The recipes have been around for at least 300 years.
Tell us a bit more about them. What are they? Are they hard cheeses or?
Yes, so these are both Portuguese style cheeses. They're you know being made in Minas Gerais. They only use autochthonous cultures, so indigenous cultures and raw milk only. These cheeses are name protected by the Brazilian government. And there are only a certain, you know, number, a certain amount of producers that are allowed to make these cheese, or these cheeses, I should say. Canastra is located in Serra da Canastra, which is this beautiful protected area full of, it's very mountainous and full of like waterfalls and whatnot. It's a little hard to get to, but once you're there, just... you don't want to leave because it's such a beautiful place. Yeah, green pastures and whatnot. So just a gorgeous place. Serro, the area where Serro cheese is produced is closer to, it's like, it's more like in the middle of the state of Minas Gerais. So it's right in the center in an area full of colonial towns. So it's very pretty. You get to visit, you know, like this very old towns. And yeah, so these are the two most important cheeses being made in Minas Gerais at the moment. There's also a cheese called requeijão, which is not as popular as Canastra and Serro. And requeijão is a cooked curd cheese that looks somewhat like yay toast, but it's not as sweet. So think of yay toast, but savory. And I haven't had all yay toasts in, you know, that there are, but the ones that, yeah, that we can find in the US, they're usually very like caramelly and butterscotchy and whatnot. Yeah. So these are the ones that I'm familiar with. Requeijão, however, is way more savory. It's closer to butter, I would say, than caramel and butterscotch. And the way that cheesemakers make requeijão is by separating the butter fat from the milk. So it's a lactic acid cheese. So they let the milk sit for, you know, 12 hours, 24 hours sometimes, and then they remove the fat. They cook the fat separately, and then they cook and wash the curds, with water and milk on a different container. And then they blend those two, they mix those two and stir it for, I don't know, 5 hours, 3 to 5 hours, depending on the amount of cheese they're making. So they get this very like this brownish sort of cheese that tastes like butter. And usually we eat that with a cup of coffee, just black coffee. And it's just incredible. But not a lot of people talk about this cheese because it's not mass produced. But it's a very important cheese to the cheese culture of Brazil, only because it's very Brazilian and it's not something, it's something that most people grow up with in my state, but we don't really, you don't find much information on it.
Yeah, it's great to hear about it.
That is definitely something you should try. Right. Yeah.
And do you feel optimistic, John, when you look at what's happening in Brazil? Is it exciting? Someone, you know, you obviously love cheese. You work in the world of cheese. Do you feel that cheese is sort of, is it going well? Are things going well for cheese in Brazil? Are more people discovering this food, getting interested in it, more people starting to make it? Is it sort of a buoyant scene?
I do. I mean, in the past couple of years, Brazil has won so many medals at the World Cheese Awards and Le Mondial du Fromage. And that only shows that, you know, people really like those cheeses. You know, the quality is high, the standards are high, they're using some of the best milk you can find, and the recipes are great too. And I mean, there's just a combination of great things, and I think that the next step will probably be exporting those cheeses. It's not something that we do. It's not something that that is part of the culture yet. Most of the cheeses that are made in Brazil or consumed in Brazil, but I believe that's the next step, is to start exporting. We know that people like it outside of the country, so that will be the next step.
When you watch a sort of scene grow, a food scene grow and develop, I sort of love it. It's yeah, it's very exciting. Well, John, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. That was really, really fascinating. A real, real pleasure. Well, I hope these cheeses get exported soon. That's all I can say, to the UK, and then I'll get to try some. Oh, thank you, John. Take care. Thank you.
You too. Thank you.
To find out more about Food FM and our content, go to foodfmradio.com.
Thank you so much for listening to A Slice of Cheese. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you have enjoyed it, it would be lovely if you could rate us on wherever you've found this podcast. It will make such a difference to us. So I hope you'll enjoy us again. Thank you very much.